south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, right now I'm looking at an email, and it's like a lot of emails I receive. And the person's asking me to explain where I am right now and where I'm doing the show. Okay, why not? I'll do that. Right now I'm sitting in a very comfortable, ergonomic chair that I think cost around $1,000. It's not mine. I don't need the latest and greatest cush for my tush. I could do this show sitting on a beach, on top of a volcano, or even a wooden crate. And believe me, I have. But hey, this magnificent chair is here and no one else is around, so why not use it? Fact is, I didn't even know you could buy an office chair for $1,000. For a grand, it should come with a flat screen something or other, or even a GPS. Wait a minute, maybe it does. There is this little compartment here that's got a lock on it. But alas, it needs a key and I don't have one. And why am I so sure it costs that much? Well, that's because it's so comfortable I just had to look it up on the internet, thinking I might want to get one myself. I mean, I like to pamper my posterior as much as the next guy, but $1,000? I thought there was a decimal point off. No such luck. So I figure I'd better enjoy the ride while no one's around, right? So anyway, I flipped the thing upside down. It says on the label under the seat that it was made in Australia, and it also says, do not remove this label under penalty of law. Yeah, and since it's still attached, surely the owner hasn't torn it off, fearing the heavy hand of the Honduran police force. Oh, and by the way, about the Honduran police force. And by the way, what I'm going to say now goes for any police force in Latin America except for maybe Cuba. So take note. If you do happen to need them for anything at all, and you phone up the local precinct and somebody actually answers, I guarantee it'll take a day or two for them to get to your house, if they come at all. And that's why I always recommend to gringos and expats that if they really need a patrol to come to their house for any reason, when you phone up, always tell them there were shots fired or someone's been killed. Then, you've got about a 75% chance that they'll show up within an hour or two. Then when they show up, tell them why you really called. You know, to help you remove that 10-foot boa constrictor that set up housekeeping in your pool pump shed. Now don't laugh, that's exactly what happened to expat Eddie's neighbor about a year ago. And yes, since this is the tropics, there are snakes down here. Sometimes big ones, but you really shouldn't get all rattled about it. Bad pun, huh? If you ever run into a big, ugly constrictor like that, it'll give you the willies all right, but it won't make a move, believe me. It will keep its distance and mind its own business. And if you think you're going to see one with every nature walk you take or in every garden, that's not going to happen. In fact, in my nearly 24 years down here, I've only seen two. Big ones, that is. And one was freshly dead, hit by a car crossing the road. They're pretty slow and they won't lunge or bite unless you actually step on one. And the only place there's the slimmest chance of that happening is if you like taking walks in the jungle. Off the trails and in the thick brush, that is. And still, I've never heard that happening to a gringo or expat. Though I'll tell you, every gardener and maintenance man does have a snake story or two. And that's why if you have a place with a big garden or spread out in the boonies, your gardener will keep the place trimmed and the brush low. Speaking of snakes, sure, they are down here all right. They're really only dangerous if you happen to be a small animal, like a squirrel or a rat or a very small dog, you know, the ones that yipe and pester humans and other animals they come in contact with. Like one vet down here told me, when a dog gets bit by a snake, it's usually because he deserved it, since dog is not on the snake's menu. And in regards to poisonous snakes, they're down here too. And though they're greatly in the minority, in the general snake population, that is, nevertheless, all the hospitals have anti-venom. As one gardener told me, only about 1 out of 20 snakes is poisonous. And if you ask any of the doctors in the hospital emergency rooms, they'll tell you they never see gringos and expats coming in with snake bite. It's always the gardeners, the farmers, and the agricultural workers. The ones that are stomping through the brush, hacking down weeds, and harvesting the crops. Now, expat Eddie, who's always good for a story, he told me that over 10 years ago, when he first got down to El Salvador, he asked his gardener that same question, because he too was concerned about snakes. And I doubt this'll surprise you. Seems all gringos and expats, especially women gringos and expats, have snakes on the brain when they first get down here. Not to mention various degrees of panic. when those supersized insects and spiders inevitably find their way indoors. Yep, there was a time when they'd give me the creeps too, and it used to be kill, kill, kill. But now, well, it's more live and let live, you know? And though you eventually take that attitude, none of us gringos and expats are totally benevolent when it comes to cockroaches, flies, rats, and scorpions. In that case, it's still kill, kill, kill for the vast majority of us long-term expats. And as for gringas and long-term lady expats, well, they'll get a guy to do it. Anyway, when expat Eddie first got down to El Salvador, he had snakes on the brain too. Now, Eddie's got about 2 acres of brush and trees and weeds behind his house, and first thing he did was he asked his gardener, "If I go back there and take a walk, what are my chances of stepping on a snake?" And the gardener replied, "Jefe," which means boss in Spanish, "Jefe, I wouldn't worry about the snakes so much. It's the landmines." Now, because there's a dairy farm adjacent to Eddie's backyard and quite a few cows, he thought he was talking about cow pies, since some folks refer to cow pies as landmines. But you see, the gardener was half serious when he said that, because remember, El Salvador back in the 80s was a notorious civil war zone. And when Eddie finally figured out the joke, some joke, huh? He said, "Are you serious? Landmines?" And the guy laughed and said, "You see any three-legged cows out there?" So anyway, if you're a nervous Nelly, just get yourself some good, solid hiking boots that extend past your ankles. And it's always a good idea not to wear shorts if you're trampling through the brush. And you know, down here in Latin America, only clueless gringos, when not at the beach, wear shorts. Latins seem to know better. And it's not because they think shorts are uncool. They know all about their own supersized insects and bugs. That's why. Let's see, where were we? Oh, yeah, we were talking about trying to get Latin American cops over to your house when you really need them. Meaning, when you call for assistance, you'll just have to exaggerate the situation quite a bit. In other words, you'll probably have to lie. Or chances are they just won't show up at all. And if they ask about the gunshots or the dead guy, or whatever you told the dispatcher on the phone if they actually picked up when you called, just play the smiling, dumb gringo act. You know, no hablo good español. So am I telling you to lie to these guys? In a word, yes. Sometimes that's the only way you have half a chance of them showing up. Just remember, the name of this show is The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, and I'm here to tell you how things really work down here in Latin America. So if you have the need to call the cops for a family dispute or a break-in or whatever, well, the fact is, those kind of things are so far down on the priority list. Well, you get the idea. So the original question was, where am I doing this show from today? Well, for starters, I'm sitting in what just might be the world's most comfortable office chair that I know now is definitely worth stealing. However, I'm not that kind of guy. Though I'm sure only the owner, an expat gringo, by the way, and I know the true value of this thing, or maybe he doesn't. Anyway, I'll be trying to work out a deal with him when he gets back from his little vacation in Roatan. So, here I am in a boutique cabana setting with 6 other nicely appointed cabanas, all of them perched on a mountainside, with 2 of them just barely visible from my window. And by the way, down here, they call cabins cabanas. Easy enough to remember, since they sound so much the same, right? Now, I happen to be in the owner's cabin, thus the $1,000 chair. So, where am I right now, GPS-wise? I'm in the mountains quite close to Copan, Honduras, looking through a gigantic picture window about 10 foot tall by 15 feet wide. It's so big that it's joined in 3 pieces. They probably don't make glass sheets that big, and if they do, I'm sure they'd have needed a helicopter to set that thing in place. And even though these cabanas are quite upscale, the glass in all these big windows is only single pane, which I'm sure you realize is not energy efficient at all if you have air conditioning. Which this place has, though I can't see when you'd ever need to use it. Since we are at about 2,500 feet above sea level, just starting into the Altiplano. And by the way, double or triple pane windows here in Latin America are almost unheard of. Even though, if installed in houses that have air conditioning anyway, they'd save untold amounts of money on electric bills. Apparently, Latin architects, construction engineers, and contractors are completely brain dead about maximizing energy savings with tried and true first world techniques, like fiberglass and foam wall and roof insulation, double and triple pane windows, or even using weather stripping. They just don't seem to have a clue. In fact, just in the last 3 or 4 months, I've walked through a number of brand new housing developments, and I know you're going to find this hard to believe, but in most cases, the doors and windows do not have weather stripping at all. Which, by the way, is why so many supersized spiders and bugs find their way into living spaces. Makes sense, right? Again, it's our gringo advantage that I'm even talking about this, because the locals sure don't. And you know, most hardware stores, except for first world franchises like Ace Hardware, don't even carry weather stripping. And if they even have a roll or two of it, nobody knows what the hell it's for. I'm not joking. Now, do remember that almost all middle class, upper middle class, and better housing is made with concrete block construction. They do not use the wooden 2x4 stud technique down here that's so commonly used up in the States. Though you do see that once in a while, but only in cheap, low-end housing. And I have seen some metal stud construction down here, but mostly with interior walls in shopping centers and strip malls. I haven't seen it done yet in single-family housing units. And there's three reasons why they use so much block and concrete construction here. One, because most of Latin America is in earthquake zones, and metal-reinforced concrete construction is ideal to counter that. And the second reason they use concrete and block is because it's completely insect and vermin-proof. And down here in the tropics and semi-tropics, if you use any of the common woods as construction materials, like pine, eventually the insects will move in and take over. And in the poor and lower classes, you see that all the time. People with dirt floors and tin roofs living symbiotically with their chickens, dogs, cats, insects, and other pests. And the third reason for concrete and block construction? And I'll give you a second here to try to guess, but you'll never get it. Okay, time's up. Believe it or not, and as strange as it seems, here's the reason. Because nearly everyone who builds a house down here, at least in the city, builds on a very small lot. And it's always their plan to keep building stories onto a house. The idea is to build up and up to the sky in as many levels as they possibly can. That's why most families move in after the first story's done, yet the house looks totally unfinished from the outside since there's rebar and plumbing tubes and electrical conduits sticking up out of the first floor walls. And that dangling stuff looks like it's part of what's supposed to be inside a non-existent second story. Now, I gotta say, it's extremely ugly if you live in a house or a neighborhood like that. But Latins aren't much on maintenance or detail, so they don't seem to care. However, we gringos and expats wince at the sight of that stuff. That's why we like to live in guarded, gated communities where our condo and housing committees can make our own zoning laws and other regulations, like you can't move in till your house has a real bona fide roof on it. So anyway, when you see hideous-looking crap like that and you see it all over the place, that means the owner someday is planning to add another story to the house. And that's why long-term expats down here will tell you, when you go visit a Latin barrio in a big city in the United States like Cleveland, that's why houses in first world barrios can be so scruffy, lacking in maintenance and detail too. Because when Latins move up to the States, illegally or not, they bring along their cultural habits. Now, of course, that's not to say all Latin houses look half-built and scruffy. But down here, that's how the middle class lives and most of the upper middle class. So to them, it's just a natural, everyday neighborhood thing. And for your information, I just have to mention this. At every single seminar I've given down here in Latin America, while we're doing our boots-on-the-ground portion, visiting businesses and neighborhoods, it never fails. I always get at least a couple of attendees who ask me, "See, Johnny, what's going on with all those ugly, rusted pipes and tubes sticking out of those houses? What's up with that?" They don't get it. It's a mystery, just like it was to me when I first got here. They're curious not only because it's so damn unsightly, but because it's obviously dangerous if a kid or two happen to be up there playing. In fact, at my last seminar just a month and a half ago, one guy seriously asked me if a hurricane had just been through, and he was dead serious about it. And I said, "Nope, that's just your average middle-class Latin neighborhood." So anyway, in every middle-class neighborhood, you've got all these rusted pipes and tubes sticking out of the tops of the walls of the houses and the buildings. And then a year or two later, though it may be wishful thinking, if the family has enough money, the workers will be back, and you'll suddenly see block and cement walls going up for a second story. And when that's all walled in, you'll see metal rebar and tubes and plumbing pipes sticking through the top of that, too, into an imaginary third story on the house. So take it from me. A lot of Latin American houses never really look finished from the outside. And that's why so many Latin American middle-class neighborhoods, especially, look like unfinished, undesirable places for gringos and expats to live. Like that gringo aptly described, the aftermath of a hurricane. We all know that could never happen in a city in the first world. Our zoning laws would never let families move in until the house is complete, with a real bona fide final roof on it. Because, you know, up north in the first world, you'll need to have the building inspector sign off on your finished project before you can start moving in. And as you might already know, down here in Latin America, it's often the case that when you start a construction project, the building inspectors never, ever come around. Ever. And that's why almost all middle-class and lower-middle-class Latin neighborhoods look like they've had no planning or zoning whatsoever. Like another seminar attendee described, it's like a lot of lower and middle-class Latin neighborhoods were constructed by a manic, depressive, schizophrenic city planner on acid, or more likely, tequila. And that's about it. You gotta see it to believe it. You can't make this stuff up. But I digress as usual. Where was I? Oh yeah, I was trying to explain where I'm sitting right now doing this show. Though I might never finish this bit. Anyway, I'm in a beautiful cabin on the side of a mountain looking through a huge pane of glass. Actually, it's three joined panes of glass that should be double or triple glazed, but they're not, since you just don't see double and triple pane glass down here at all. Now, I have noticed that in some of the bigger cities in Latin America, American window franchises like Pella Windows have arrived, and a few well-known European window franchises, too. And of course, being from the first world, they sell single, double, triple, and even quadruple pane windows. And various versions of what they call smart windows, layered with high-tech films and such. So they are available, but it seems no one's using them. And when you talk about double and triple panes and smart windows, even the builders and architects don't seem to have a clue. Even with the huge real estate building bubble that's going on in almost every medium and large-sized city here in Latin America, along with all those hundreds and hundreds of big glass residential and industrial towers, still, from what I see, they all have single panes, which makes a building very inexpensive in the short run, but very expensive in the long run if you're going to air condition it. And you'd think they'd have figured that out, being that electric rates are 3 to 4 times higher than they are in the States. And by the way, that's the big exception to the cost of living rule down here in Latin America. Everything produced down here is very inexpensive compared to where you come from, except electricity. And by the way, speaking of home and building construction, and windows in particular, from the architects and builders I've spoken with down here, none of them, as of yet, use Pella or Anderson or any of the first world brands because they're just too damn expensive. Since down here there are plenty of Latin American window makers who'll charge a quarter of the gringo franchise price. It looks to me like first world window manufacturers and retail outlets like Pella and Anderson are in that small handful of first world franchises that just aren't going to make it. And you might say, well, they've got the gringo advantage going for them. They're pure first world, and they're a well-known product and marketed heavily up there. And thus, Latins down here have been exposed to them through cable TV and such. Well, you see, if you've been listening to the Expat File show for a while, you'll know that architects and building contractors down here are notorious for cutting costs and skimping on projects. So why in the world would they pay 4 times as much for windows? When to the average Latin, windows are windows. They're just frames with glass in them. And one last thing about windows. The choice for new construction these days, whether commercial or residential, are windows with vinyl frames or aluminum extruded frames. Meaning, once you've got your block and concrete house built, the window company will come over and measure your openings and install very nice aluminum custom frames. But do have a look at the previous jobs they've done to make sure they're good with the details and do first world style work. Some do, some don't. So if you're going to build or put in new windows, do check references. So anyway, in nearly all Latin American new construction, window frames are custom made right on the job site. Then, once the frames are installed, they'll measure the area for the glass and come back a few weeks later and install the panes. So like I said, since no one ever installs double pane windows or smart windows, that means you're stuck with the usual choice of either extruded aluminum frames or vinyl framed windows. Now, of course, you could go with wood framed windows too, but I'll get to that later. Okay, here's a very important tip. I strongly recommend against vinyl window frames, even though they seem to be the latest construction fashion. And why do you think all of a sudden in the past year or two they've been showing up everywhere? Well, that's because they cost a little less than the aluminum ones. And like I said, architects and contractors will try to cut corners everywhere they can. And those corners they cut, many times you won't even know it until you've moved in. Which is why you have to be at the job site regularly and check things out. And here's another tip. One of the best ways to keep your contractors on their toes is to bring your camera when you show up and take a lot of photos. Every time. You get the picture? Bad pun, huh? So, even if you don't know dick about construction and building techniques, anyone snapping photos always seems to keep people on their toes. Wait a minute. Did I hear the D word? Yep. What about it? Sometimes it just needs to be said. So anyway, just in the last maybe 3 to 5 years, vinyl windows have arrived. Before that, it was strictly wood and aluminum. So you'll see vinyl now all over the place. And if you don't take my advice and do end up with vinyl framed windows, please don't get the white vinyl frames. No matter how nice they look on the model house or in the building supply showroom, don't do it. Because remember, the sun is so hot and merciless down here, after a few years your plastic frames will look like crap. Not to mention the sun will help etch that grime and dust right into that formerly beautiful white finish. Permanently. So if you're gonna go with vinyl frames, which I don't recommend, go with a coffee or dark brown color. At least then you won't see the dirt and grime. Though I guarantee you in 5 or 6 years, they'll start looking bleached and parched like all plastic does after it's been exposed to the sun for an extended period of time. And if you don't believe me, just have a look at what the sun does to a used car's dashboard after a while. And I'm talking about the sun up in Boise or Cleveland. You can't even imagine how quickly the sun down here degrades plastic, any kind of plastic. Anyway, if you get vinyl, you'll regret it. And that's why I never recommend asphalt or fiberglass shingles either. They may be okay in Jersey, Chicago, Milwaukee, and Seattle, but the sun down here absolutely destroys them. And even though some of them come with a 10 or 15 year warranty, that's just a stupid marketing ploy and a joke. I guarantee if you get asphalt or fiberglass shingles, in 5 years they'll look worse than Bruce Jenner's face. So then, what about the more standard aluminum framed windows? Here's a good tip. Though I highly suggest you get aluminum framed windows, don't get the plain standard aluminum frames, the kind they use in hospitals and commercial buildings up north. You know what I'm talking about. And they get dull and pit and stain and look like hell after a while, don't they? Get the anodized colored ones, either brown or gray. And believe me, those things can still look new after 10 or 20 years. Even more if you wash them once in a while. Now, if you get the ones that are pure aluminum and not colored at all, you know, they look like, well, aluminum. Anyway, they won't stand up like the anodized ones. And after 5 or 10 years, you'll be sorry. Now, it's true, aluminum windows offer no insulation value at all. But since it's very unlikely you're going to have double or triple paned windows anyway, the lack of insulation with aluminum frames won't matter much. So, now you might ask, what about wood-framed windows? Good question. Because wood-framed windows have been the standard down here for 500 years. And though Latins are very excellent carpenters and craftsmen, in time, tropical weather destroys all wood-framed windows, no matter how nicely they're made or how waterproof they are. And you know, there are a lot of wood-framed windows down here, especially in old, restored colonial buildings, and in all old churches and cathedrals and government buildings, too. Unfortunately, the windows in those buildings are the first things to deteriorate and look like crap. Which is why, in new construction, wooden window frames are not recommended. So what happens if you're interested in buying or living in a colonial building with beautiful hand-carved beams and doors and windows? Down here, those kind of places are available. And even if you pick one up cheap, it'll generally need a hell of a lot of restoration work. Well, then you'd be ruining the whole effect if you didn't stick with wooden frames. Which means, of course, you'll be looking at a lifetime of upkeep and maintenance. So just be prepared for that. Or you can do what 99% of Latin folks do who own colonial buildings like that and live in them, which is basically no maintenance at all until the doors and windows happen to rot and fall right off the hinges. You think I'm joking, right? Well, I'm not. So, like I said a long time ago, I'm doing this show today, looking down a mountain through a giant single-pane window at a group of about a half dozen avocado trees. They're called aguacate trees in Spanish. And by the way, the first syllable in that word aguacate is agua, A-G-U-A, meaning water. So they say aguacate instead of avocado. Now, I've asked a few Latin gardeners and farmers why the word agua is in aguacate. I mean, avocados are no way saturated with liquid like, let's say, a lemon or an orange or a tangerine, right? And farmers and gardeners, they just shrug and say, they don't know. So anyway, I'm looking at this group of avocado trees right now, and there's 3 or 4 birds that keep coming by to peck at the fruit. And they're not just hitting them all scattershot. They're picking at one particular avocado that's hanging low. Now, I don't know much about birds, though I like to watch the colorful ones, so where I am is a very good place to sit. And for you bird watchers out there, I'm sure you'd be jealous. Since just in the past hour I've seen two brilliant orange ones, bigger than your average robin, and robins, by the way, don't get down this far. Anyway, along with those guys, I see a pair of smaller birds that are bright red, and they're not into the avocados, but more into pecking insects off a big old tree trunk. And there's four or five big blue birds with black heads that are really into taking a whack at that avocado, which makes me wonder why that one particular avocado is so interesting to them. And then there's a pair of medium-sized toucans that have been hanging around all day. They've been sitting on the same branch for hours, not doing much of anything at all. They must be lovebirds, newly in love, since they're not fighting. Now, about avocados. Once you're down here, the first time you go to a big market, you realize there aren't one or two kinds of avocados. In fact, there are about a dozen kinds of avocados in Central America alone. And I personally tried about five or six different kinds already. And the one you guys are all used to up in Cleveland is called the Hass, H-A-S-S, which of course grows down here like crazy, and there's huge plantations of them. They're a very big export item, and in fact a very easy and lucrative crop for a gringo to get into who wants to go into farming. The only downside being it takes about 4 or 5 years to get the first harvest. But the ones you know up north are not the best avocados of all. The best one, I don't even know the name of it, but when it's ripe, it's half blackish-green on one side, and the other half pinkish-red. And that's how it differs from all the others. The outside part that's pinkish-red. And I'm telling you, if you close your eyes and eat this thing, it tastes like cashew butter. So what's not to love about that? Now, it turns out that Hass avocado you're used to up north, if you pick it while it's green and hard, it'll take about a week or two to ripen. Or, unfortunately, as they do in the States with most of them these days, they hit them with ethylene gas to ripen them. The same way they artificially ripen green tomatoes in the States. Yuck, huh? So the Hass avocado transports well and it's pretty tough. Whereas the one I'm talking about that's pinkish red on one side, well, once you pick it, you've got about a day or two to eat it or it spoils. So unless you happen to be down here and in the lowlands where these things grow, you'll never get the chance to taste what most Latins will tell you is the best avocado in the world. So anyway, that should give you a little bit of an idea of where I'm doing my show from today. Oh, and now come the hummingbirds. Looks like two or three different kinds. They just dropped down below the window to hit on those red and yellow flowers. Think I'll go over to the window and get a better look. Oh, crap, I'm stuck. I can't get out of this damn chair.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.